It's time now to go beyond the headlines and for the next 2 hours, go where every sports fan wants to go. Behind the scenes and into the practice facilities, locker rooms, coaches' offices, and press boxes to get the info before anyone else. This is the ESPN 1320 Insiders.
Oh, yeah, it is. Air horns, applause. It's Friday. We made it. That's James Hamm. I'm Kyle Madsen. Jiffy Lube sponsors the program. And it's a Friday. And Bill, the not the head honcho, but the second to the head honcho.
The assistant to the regional manager.
Brought bagels. I'm not going to lie. I walked in at the same time as him.
Yeah?
And he was carrying a giant bag from a bakery. But it's a bakery that people typically go, like you can go, I don't want to name the place because they don't pay us. They typically go, to hell with it. He walked in with a Panera bag.
Oh.
Because you can go to Panera just for like yourself.
Of course.
You don't, it's not necessarily you walk in with a box of donuts. Typically that's for a group of people. And so he's walking in and I'm like, huh, are we going to go treats 3 days in a row?
Oh.
That, okay. And then he pulled out bagels, which I feel like a bagel is not a breakfast treat. That's just a breakfast item.
It is. And, you know, I'm not a person who will seek out a bagel.
Same.
But if it's free on the counter and there's still a tub of the, like, the cream cheese stuff out there, then I'm in.
Okay, so you're pro cream cheese. You're more into the cream cheese addition than the bagel itself.
Yeah, I'm not gonna have the bagel by itself, especially here at the office. I don't think we have butter in the fridge.
Okay,
so I don't want like a dry bagel. I'm not going dry bagel.
Yeah, no. Of course, I feel like that is on an alley-oop. You're more into the pass than the dunk.
Yeah,
I feel like.
Yeah, very much so.
Sure. Okay. Yeah, very good. That's James. I'm Kyle. We've got a ton of NFL stuff to get to. Week 4 began last night. I want to talk about the Keegan Murray contract stuff as well. We didn't get all the way into that yesterday, and I would like to do so today. So we'll also keep the Kings front of mind with Media Day. Thank you. Media Day coming up on Monday. We'll keep the Kings front of mind because basketball season is right around the corner. But oh my God, I cannot... I'm sure they're out there, and I'm sure people could give me examples. But off the top of my head, I can't think of a worse way to lose than the way the Cardinals did last night.
Hmm. Okay.
They were bad for a lot of the game.
Oh, they were.
I was super. I wasn't impressed with their offense really to start the year. They played the Saints and then they played Carolina, and their offense just kind of it was pretty up and down. And then they play the 49ers, and again it was not a great version of their offense. And last night the Boo Birds are out and they're not calling a timeout before the half, but then calling a timeout with 2 seconds left and then throwing it short of the sticks, not even throwing a Hail Mary at the end of the half. It was just it felt like a runaway train toward, oh, this is just kind of it.
I thought we were going to have to drop them down at least one tier. I thought that they were going to get boat raced in the second half. They just looked completely
lifeless.
And not only that, but there's this weird thing that's happening there, which I hate seeing because I think we're seeing it in two different spots here in the NFL this season, where a young second-year wide receiver has just lost all of his confidence. Mm-hmm. And I think we're seeing with Brian Thomas in Jacksonville,
sure,
where that dude is just a straight up baller and then all of a sudden he can't catch a pass.
Mm-hmm.
What I saw from Marvin Harrison Jr. last night in the first half was so it was disheartening. You're watching a player who is falling apart on the field, like to a point where I was really surprised they kept running him out there.
Mm-hmm.
Like you can't throw to him. Like, there's the early play where he runs the completely wrong route. He does
multiple times.
Multiple times where, like, you know, again, their quarterback got sacked 6 times yesterday.
Oof.
He didn't have a bunch of time for Marvin Harrison to not read the play, and he just kept messing up. And then he goes over the middle, bobbles the ball, hands it right to the other team from interception.
That was like beyond a drop.
Oh, well beyond a drop. It was like, oh, there it goes, right to the other team.
It was like, didn't quite corral it and then didn't know what to do. It looked really bleak. It was the first time. So Marvin Harrison Jr. dropped that pass against the Niners, right, where he was wide open and might have walked in for a touchdown.
Yeah.
And just dropped it.
Yep.
After that, and again, he had a disappointing rookie year, but he wasn't bad.
No, he had like 880 yards and 8 touchdowns.
Yeah, it wasn't terrible, but it was a little underwhelming given what we've seen from some, given what we saw from Brock Bowers and Malik Nabers certainly last year.
Oh, yeah, of course.
But I had never, even in the Niner game, I had never reached a point where I'm like, maybe Marvin Harrison Jr. just isn't very good. Last night I got there.
Oh,
last night I got to, maybe he is just not ever going to be a top-end NFL wide receiver.
Yeah, it became a problem. Like, mm-hmm. It certainly, like, again, you talked about, I forgot about the Niners drop, where he's just wide open,
wide open.
30 yards downfield, no one around him. All he has to do is grab the ball, and he's walking into the end zone.
It's not even like footsteps, he turned his head, or short on it, just dropped.
Yeah, just dropped.
But then he comes back with the touchdown that made it 20-13 in the fourth quarter. Unbelievable catch. A terrific throw from Kyler Murray. But an unbelievable catch over Devon Witherspoon, who is Seattle's best corner and a very, very good corner.
Mm-hmm.
Went up, adjusted his body, used his frame, caught it with his hands.
Yes.
And just made exactly the type of play you expect an elite top, what was he, a top 5 pick, top 8 pick?
I think he's top 4.
Just that type of player to make, and he did that. And I did not notice, I was recording a podcast while the game was going on, so I did not take note of this. You noted it wasn't a celebration. What would you even call that after the catch?
No, it was an outburst of emotion. You could see it. Like, he caught the ball, he rolled over, he's on a knee, and he just puts his head down, and you could just see this. He had a moment where it was like, oh, okay, I can do this.
Yeah.
I'm back. Like,
yeah, like almost like a relief.
Yeah, like a sigh of relief, and you know, you could see him get a little choked up. To me, you know what it reminded me of? It really reminded me a little bit of the Mac Jones moment after the 49ers game where where he gave Adrian Martinez a big hug and then he starts, you know, you can see him choking up. You can see that with Marvin, and you can see like his teammates coming over and making sure he's all right. Because, mm-hmm. you know, nobody wants to fail. Like,
yeah.
And he's a stud. Like, you know he's going to be a good wide receiver.
That's it. He's not some rando. Like, they know they can, if they're going to be great, they need him.
Yeah.
And I think you're right, man. The way, it wasn't like his teammates came over to celebrate. It was like they were coming over to recognize, like, dude, see, we've been taught, like,
yeah,
this
you got
is you.
This. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, that was a cool moment.
Yeah, it was a good moment. It was a good moment. And, like, look, I think that's where when you're a teammate for a young wide receiver or a young player at all that's struggling, like, you gotta like, prop these guys up. They kept talking about, like, on the broadcast, what do you do to fix a player's confidence? And I think A is you ask the broadcast team not to talk about how you've lost your confidence for 3 hours.
Step one.
Step one. Yeah, like, hey, can you guys just not talk about that the whole entire broadcast?
Yeah.
But then, you know, he kept going out and failing. And that's what it was. I mean, straight up, he was failing on the field, and then all of a sudden he had his moment. And it just showed you, like, the athleticism, the ability, everything. Mm-hmm. It's like, hey, man, just go out there and play.
Yeah.
Like, you're overthinking everything. Just go out there and play.
I'm trying to bring a local example here, so this is how I'm going to try and do it. It was akin to, I think he got the yips.
Oh, yeah.
With catching the football. Because that's such a natural thing for somebody as talented and as gifted as he is, who grew up with a Hall of Fame wide receiver father.
Of course.
Like, that dude has been catching passes since he was, since he could stand, right?
Yep.
There's a, I think, naturalness to it that I think went away. And you start thinking about, like, where are my hands?
Mm-hmm.
And as the ball comes in, how far apart do my hands need to be? And when do I turn a field? Like, it became too mechanical. It reminds me of Remember when A's slugger Chris Davis?
Yeah.
Couldn't throw from the outfield?
Yeah.
It wasn't that he had a bad arm. It was that he had the yip and could not throw it.
Yeah, weird.
Like, could not make his body do the motion to make a good throw to second base or to the cutoff man because he was just thinking about it too much. He was so far inside his head. That was that second, I think it was his second drop by Marvin Harrison Jr. where he led to the interception.
Yeah.
Where you could see it hit his hands and it was like, I don't know what to do now. Like, how do I tuck the ball? How do I? So I was really, really happy for him in that moment because that was tough to watch.
And the other local tie, like, look, Chuck Knobloch is a guy who is known as who got the yips, like, seriously.
Yeah.
But before Chuck Knobloch, it was Steve Sachs, Sacramento native, who has been on the A's broadcast this year.
Mm-hmm.
Steve Sachs got the yips, and, you know, it's weird. A second baseman, two second basemen that we know of, at least, that couldn't make the throw from second to first, which is like, it's the shortest throw in the game.
It should be.
Yeah.
You're even the way you're fielding it on the right side of the infield, you don't even have to really turn your body a lot.
No, it's just right there.
It's just step and throw.
Yeah, yeah.
And there's more to it than that, but the yips are tough, dude.
Yep.
Like, you hear it a lot in golfers. I think it happens a lot with kickers. Speaking of kickers, the reason I mentioned that loss being so brutal for the Cardinals,
mm-hmm,
is they are fighting uphill offensively all game. You can see it. And I think Seattle's defense is for real, by the way. Seattle, I think, is a good team. And you see the Cardinals fighting uphill, and they scratch and they claw and they tie the freaking game.
Yeah.
And it's you, division opponent at home. You're wearing the rivalry jerseys. You got the fans back into it. And then your kicker drops one short of the designated landing zone and puts Seattle on the 40. They need to run two plays to get into field goal range. And they kick a game-winning 52-yard field goal despite receiving the ball with 33 seconds left.
It's really weird. The kicking rules, they kind of feel like baseball extra inning rules where you start a guy at second.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, man, it's so basic. You bunt the dude over, hit a fly ball, you got to run.
Right.
That's it.
It's easy.
But everybody, it feels like they overthink it, and like we're not seeing like 18 inning games, but the same thing with the kicker. They just like kick the ball right, like just a normal kickoff.
Yes.
And they would have been fine, but yes. No.
They tried to get, I don't know, Chad Ryland was a guy who was drafted right after Jake Moody, by the way.
Mm.
Chad Ryland was drafted in the fourth round, I think, by New England. And that didn't work out for him there. But I don't want to say teams aren't taking kicking seriously, because they very clearly are. But I almost wonder if it's going to become a standard practice, given what we saw the 49ers go through with their kicker. Given that Arizona just lost a game because their kicker did a bad kickoff.
Yeah.
It almost makes me wonder if at some point we will see teams have an in-house like backup kicker.
Yeah.
Like on the practice squad, yeah, working out with the team, ready to go in the event that hey, this kicker has not been great and then he just cost us a game, we're going to try something different here. Like, teams are too good now. Every team, I know we do these tiers every week,
mm-hmm,
but in the NFL, the gap between the best teams and the worst teams is closing pretty dramatically.
Yeah.
And I think if you have the five best teams and the five worst teams, the 22 teams in the middle are all very, very close. And it's going to come down to, I think you're going to see so many games, and we saw it last week, so many games come down to kicks. And I kind of wonder if, I don't think necessarily drafting kickers higher or paying kickers more money is the move.
Mm-hmm.
But I do think allocating roster resources to kicking is going to become a thing, because we saw it with the 49ers last year. And we've seen the impact it's had on them in narrow wins over the Saints and Cardinals, where having a reliable kicker has helped them win those games.
Yeah, we even saw it this last weekend. You know, Atlanta made a kicking change after Younghoe Koo missed, mm-hmm, one of his three kicks in week one. And then he wasn't great the next week, if I'm not mistaken. So they ended up going with a completely different kicker, and that just ended up being a complete disaster.
Yeah.
Well, actually, they gave Youngway Koo like the first week, and then they like put him on a timeout. They kept him on the roster, but he wasn't the kicker. And then they had John Parker Romo go out there, and he was great the first game. The second game, absolutely atrocious, and played into the fact. I mean, he's not the reason they lost 30-0, but certainly you get in field goal range a couple of times, and the guy just comes up empty.
Mm-hmm.
It's deflating.
Yeah,
so
brutal.
Yeah. Like, super basic part of the game that's just totally missed.
Shanking a kickoff was so far in the back of my mind on what I thought was going to happen there.
Yeah.
I'm going, all right, you got to just lock up. You can't have a big return. Maybe you just take the touchback. But nope. Kicked it short of the landing zone, 40-yard line, bang, bang, two plays, 52-yard field goal. Night-night, Seahawks win.
Game over.
Damn. Seahawks are good, man.
I think they are.
They figured out they did not play a great 60 minutes last night and still managed to find a way to win. I think Seattle's going to be a problem.
Yeah.
I don't think we can write them off in the NFC West race. I don't think you write anyone off in the NFC West race just yet. All right, we've got more Week 4 NFL action. We'll dive into the Raiders-Bears matchup, which you'll be able to hear right here on ESPN 1320. 12:30 coverage begins on Sunday. 12:50?
I don't know.
12:30, tap in. We'll have the Raider game for you, Raiders-Bears, and then we'll also get to the 49ers matchup against the Jacksonville Jaguars. But Kings Media Day is on Monday.
Mm-hmm.
We are going to keep the Kings front of mind. We didn't dive into the Keegan Murray extension yesterday. Let's dive into it next. How much should the Kings be paying Keegan Murray on his rookie extension? We'll discuss that on the Insiders. It's ESPN 1320 Sacramento Sports Center. I want you to finish that point, so I'll circle it back.
Now, back to the Insiders with James Hamm and Kyle Madsen, brought to you by Jiffy Lube on ESPN 1320.
If you'd like to watch the show, please do. We simulcast on YouTube, youtube.com/ESPN1320, twitch.tv/ESPN1320. Appreciate everybody watching. Hello, hi. I appreciate everybody listening on the radio, ESPN 1320 AM and 98.5 FM HD2. And everyone listening on the free Odyssey app, maybe you're on the iHeart app, maybe you're on the TuneIn app. We appreciate you listening there. And if you're a podcast listener, hello from the past. Hope the future is going well. It's the James Hamm and Kyle Madsen Show, available wherever you get your podcast. So if you don't watch the show, we highly encourage that you do, because when we play commercials on the radio side, we just hang out through the break, and we just had an awesome discussion about kicking in the NFL. and our guy Eric in the chatty house said punting is going extinct, and we were just kind of talking about how it sure feels like at some point we're going to look up, and it might not be for another 10-15 years, but at some point we're going to look up and there's going to be a team that for an entire season punts like 20 times.
Well, I mean, right now the Colts have punted the ball on the season 3 times. Wait, no.
Once. They punted one time in 3 games.
No, he's played 3 games, but he didn't. It's so much that I did not know their punter's name is Rigoberto Sanchez.
Great name.
It is a great name.
It's a very Hollywood name.
He's got like one punt for 46 yards, and
One even knows if the guy's good or not.
We have no idea. We have no idea.
That's a Colts punter. Couldn't tell you.
Yeah, I just the dynamic where teams are just kicking long field goals, like super, super long field goals, or they're going for it on fourth down.
Mm-hmm.
It just makes it like really, really tough to be a punter right now, which is why I will continue to say the punters need to diversify, learn how to kick off, be the kickoff guy, or learn how to be the backup kicker. So in case there's an emergency.
And maybe that's what, I don't want to get super far into the weeds on a special teams conversation, because I do want to talk about Keegan Murray's extension, but I think at some point, maybe that's the evolution. Teams are punting so little that they go, all right, we're going to teach our place kicker to punt.
Mm-hmm.
For the few instances that we do punt during the year, he can get it done for us, and he'll also kick field goals. And it just turns into one specialty position. And maybe you have two guys who can do that very quickly.
Yeah.
The Detroit Lions had the fewest punts last year with 45.
Oh.
there are two teams tied for the second fewest. Who do you think they were?
Mm.
This is the 2024 season.
Buffalo?
No. Buffalo was 23rd. They had 55 punts.
Ravens?
The Ravens were tied with Buffalo. They also had 55 punts.
Wow. I don't know.
The Atlanta Falcons.
Oh.
And the San Francisco 49ers.
Oh, wow. All right.
I'm telling you. It was not a terrible offense last year.
No. Well, I mean, this year, did you see the, I think it was Mayoko put out a tweet, the 49ers, despite not having their starting quarterback for two games, and most of their receiving core, including, mm-hmm. you know, like throw George Kittle in there for the mm-hmm. last two games, they lead the NFL in like passing yards per game at like 271.3 or something.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah, but passing yards way down this year. They're also fourth in attempts.
That's crazy. They also, they haven't scored a rushing touchdown the first week of the season, in the first 3 weeks of the season for the first time in 35 seasons.
Dang, yeah, their running game is not good. They're 26th in rushing yards, 29th in yards per attempt.
Yeah, that's wild.
Yeah, they gotta figure that out. Because I don't think finishing the season fourth in pass attempts is going to be conducive to them winning a lot of games. But maybe that's the zag. Maybe that's what Kyle Shanahan's adjustment was this year. Is, all right, we're going to throw the hell out of the football.
Yep.
I don't know. That's James Hamm. I'm Kyle Madsen. Let's shift gears and talk about the Sacramento Kings. Media Day is on Monday.
Mm-hmm.
Keegan Murray does not have an extension yet.
He does not.
The Keegan Murray extension hits on one of the sports things that I am most interested by. And that is the player, and Keegan Murray fits so perfectly into this box. Pause. He is a good player.
Mm-hmm.
I need that to be established. I think Keegan Murray is good. We've talked about this before. He would start on probably every team in the NBA. You can nitpick and maybe find a few that he wouldn't, but he would be a starter on almost all the NBA teams.
Yeah.
But, so I think you have to pay him. But, he's probably going to get a contract, in my estimation, in my opinion. I think whatever contract he winds up signing, I don't think there's ever going to be a year in the course of that contract where we look at it and go, wow, Keegan Murray is way outplaying that deal. In fact, I think it'll be the opposite. I think you'll look at it and go, man, Keegan's good, but do you like Keegan at 30 a year? 30 million a year?
Yeah.
28 million a year? That's what I'm... I would never advocate that you don't pay Keegan Murray. Because you need a play... It's the Kings specifically. Need a player who's a switchable defender. Their best defender, I would argue.
Yep.
He's a switchable defender who can knock down a three. He can attack a closeout. He's got a good post-up game if they ever want to use that. Like, there's enough things there that you need him on your team. So you can't not give him an extension, but also whatever extension I think you're giving him, you're a little bit wary of.
Yeah, I mean, we're going to hear this term like surplus value pop up again and again. And right now I think Keegan Murray does have surplus value. He's a player that, you know, is going to, I don't know what the number is this year. I think it's probably $11 million as the fourth pick in the draft. It'll be right around there what he'll make for this season.
Mm-hmm.
And he's probably worth something closer to 20. Now the problem is like when you go to do an extension, like anything that you're doing there is there's like a floor that we know
right.
of what Keegan Murray is. And it was probably last season was the floor.
I would agree with you.
Right. And then there's a ceiling and we still don't know where the ceiling is.
Might've been the rookie year.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that would be a bummer. I would even say
I don't think that's
year right. two where he averaged, you know, 15 a game. That could be a ceiling, right?
Sure.
18 a game could be the ceiling, 19 or 20. Yeah. We don't really know. I don't think it's like 25 or 27 points per game. I don't believe that to be the case. But we're in a new NBA where you're not seeing, he makes $11.1 million this year, where you don't rubber stamp like rookie scale extensions anymore.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we look at the first pick in that year's draft, in Keegan's draft. It's Paolo Banchero. He got max money.
As he should.
You're looking at the number two pick, and that's Chet Holmgren, and he got close to max money, but not quite, because he plays for the best team in the league, and they're trying to keep their team together as a young core.
He got the Draymond type of extension, where Clay and Steph were max guys, Jalen Williams and SGA are max guys,
yep.
And Chet is going to be just a little below that.
Yeah, he's right there, though. He signed a very large deal.
Yeah, he's not underpaid.
No, especially for a player who has had major, major injury problems Correct. Already throughout his career.
Mm-hmm.
And then on top of that, you have, like, the next player is Jabari Smith Jr., and Jabari signed the 5-year, $122 million deal. No one else from his draft class, until you get down to number 12 at Jalen Williams, who got max money, no one else has signed like their rookie scale extension. And part of it is they're waiting to see what Keegan Murray gets. You know, so we've got Jaden Ivey, the pick after, and we've got Benedict Mathurin. I don't know if you're the Portland Trailblazers, and for that matter, if you're Shaedon Sharpe's people, you probably don't want to sign a deal this summer, because you want to say, okay, let me show you what I can be.
Mm-hmm.
And then next summer, you know, you're still a restricted free agent. They can still keep you. But a guy like Dyson Daniels at number 8, like, Dyson Daniels has been a baller. And, you know, there's potential for some regression this coming season.
Mm-hmm.
Just because, you know, like, going through a season and having 3 steals a game. Yeah, that's interesting and everything. But how are you going to repeat that?
Mm-hmm.
Because teams are going to be like, hey, we're not going to go near him for a while. And so there's a possibility there. There's a possibility of shooting numbers come down a little bit, like, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But I think the rest of the league is kind of waiting for the Keegan extension and seeing what you can get. You have until, I believe it's October 31st, to sign the extension. But I do think, like, the NBA is shifting where, as opposed to just saying, okay, like, look, we're going to give Keegan Murray the full max rookie scale extension of,
mm-hmm.
you know, 5-year 150 or whatever it is. 160, 164.
Mm-hmm.
Instead of doing that, no, we're going to start looking at this value chart, you know, the algorithm that each team has. It puts a value on a player and how much you would spend on a player.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think it feels good for players to be looked at that way. And you kind of expect, when you're the 4th pick in the draft, that you're in line to make this monstrous second contract. But, like, look how many failures we've seen over the last, you know, couple of decades of, you know, first round picks, top 10 picks. I would say, like, getting a rotational player is probably about 60%.
Mm-hmm.
That means that, like, 40% fail completely.
And you can really handcuff yourself by giving out a bad extension.
Oh yeah.
Or giving out an extension to the wrong player.
Yeah, totally. So there has to be, like, a balancing point here where you're looking at, if I give this player X amount of dollars, number one, is he ever tradable again? Like, you're not mm-hmm. expecting to trade him right away, but, like, would another team pay this amount?
Yeah.
That's always going to be, that's one of the, like, the basic tenets of the Monty McNair, but he comes from the general manager tree that is Daryl Morey, mm-hmm. right? And Daryl Morey was always like, hey, you need to have a clear-cut idea of what every single one of your players is worth, and then you need to not overpay your own players. Because mm-hmm. that's another issue that the NBA has had for years, is that teams overpay their own players. Part of that is a rookie-scale extension. And so, like, look, you have to be realistic about who Keegan is as a player, mm-hmm. and you have to also be realistic about the situation that you've put Keegan Murray in as a team. And that's where we're going to have some give and take here, where a team is saying, hey, well, I mean, you average 12 points a game, and he's looking back and saying, well, you also brought in a 35-year-old guy who shoots 17 times a game at the small forward position, and I didn't get the shots.
Yeah, I think Keegan's argument would be you created a roster. Not you, Scott. The Kings created a roster
yep.
that required me to play this role, and I played this role.
Yeah, and that role is to play defense on the most difficult cover
yes.
the other team has. And it's to stand in the corner and not get consistent looks from three.
Yep.
So not only do you not get enough shots, but your three-point percentage starts to wane
mm-hmm.
because you're not getting the shots. You're not getting mm-hmm. like in a rhythm and consistency.
But if I'm the Kings,
yep,
I'm then going, well, no, the opportunities were there. You just did not take them.
Yeah, so
you get the ball in your hands, and too often you don't throw a shot at the rim.
I do think that this is going to become a lot closer to what baseball arbitration is, which is like dirty and nasty, and it's mm-hmm. like the team is offering, you know, $1.2 million. The player wants $1.5 million, and then they go into a room and they just throw shade at each other the entire time.
The team's going to talk about how much that player sucks.
Yeah, they are. Like, oh, did you see how, you know, we talked yesterday about hard hit balls, soft hit balls, all that stuff. Mm-hmm. They're going to have an entire chart of how many bad things you did on the field.
Yep.
Like what your exact defensive metrics are.
Mm-hmm.
And then like all this weird stuff. And it's this epic battle. I don't know that we've reached that point with the NBA, but I'm looking at all of the contracts that are happening this summer. And, you know, again, Cam Thomas just signed the restricted free agent, you know, so mm-hmm. fine, I'll just play for the qualifying offer, right? And then I'll leave you guys and you guys, whatever, mm-hmm. right? And then we saw, did you see the Quentin Grimes offer?
I did not.
Philadelphia, according to our friend Michael Scotto, offered Quentin Grimes a 4-year, $39 million deal, which is basically his qualifying offer with 8% raises.
God, it's $9.75 million a year?
Yeah.
Oh, God.
And he's like, nope, that's fine. I'm probably just going to sign the qualifying offer. And it's like, okay, well, we control like how much playing time you get. And it's like, all right. Like, it's tough. So I don't know. The Kings and Keegan aren't at that point where it's mm-hmm. like a lowball situation is happening. I don't believe. But I think a realistic discussion on how much you're truly worth as a player. And that's not always a comfortable situation. And I do look at Keegan Murray not as a $30 million a year player
mm-hmm.
because then again, the surplus value is a huge negative.
Right.
I look at him more as like a...
If the Kings... You talk about a low ball offer.
Yeah.
But again, not an insulting low ball offer. I think if you're the Kings and you're trying to put out a low offer as like a negotiation point, where, hey, we're going to throw this out there. In the minute chance he takes it, what do you think that number is? I've got one in mind.
480.
Okay.
That would be like a low ball and slightly insulting.
I did 5 and 90.
5 and 90. Yeah. Okay. Which is 18 less.
18 a year.
Which is less than 480.
Less per year with one more year.
Yeah. So, no, and I think his people are going to say, okay, look at Jabari Smith's numbers, look at my numbers, and we're the same player. Like, realistically, like, the stats line up almost identically.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, his people could say, well, you know, he plays on a better team and blah, 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 you know, impacts winning more. And Keegan's people could say, yeah, but the reason why you're not winning games isn't because of Keegan. It's because you don't have more players like Keegan. And the Houston Rockets have more players like Jabari Smith Jr., who are young and athletic and play defense. So, yeah, I think it's interesting to see where we're going to go with this, but I do think something will get done. I have heard that, like, conversations are happening. There's nothing to report yet, but conversations are happening, and I would expect something to get done because I do know the Kings value Keegan Murray a lot.
I am so interested to see what this winds up looking like.
Mm-hmm.
Because I think there's a real chance that, depending on how this goes, that there's a, like, it could really put Keegan in a bad spot if he signs a 4-year, $120 million deal.
Yeah.
Because now there's this expectation that you're building, he is a foundational number one or number two for what you're doing moving forward.
Yeah, I mean, that's going to be the problem. I do think like a 5-year 120, 122, mm-hmm. like Jabari Smith got, which is $24 million a year, a little over $24 million. I think that's fair.
Yeah.
Like, and if his people are asking for $28 million, that seems a little high. Because you are going to get into the situation where it's like, hey, are you actually living up to the contract?
Mm-hmm.
And if you have him at a point where some seasons he's going to overplay his contract and other seasons he's going to be equal to his contract, maybe a little bit below his contract value,
mm-hmm.
then that's kind of the sweet spot where it's fair for everyone. I do look at him very much in the same way that I look at like Cam Johnson. I think he's in the... Like I thought he would be better than Cam Johnson, and yeah. not Cam Johnson this one magical year where he averaged 19 a game,
mm-hmm.
right? Every other year of Cam Johnson's career looks very similar to what we've seen from Keegan Murray so far, except for Keegan plays every night.
I wonder how much ceiling factors in, like projection. Do the Rockets project out Jabari Smith Jr. continuing to be this player that's in line with Keegan Murray and vice versa for the Kings?
Mm-hmm.
I'd be really, really interested to know that.
Go ahead.
All right. We got to step aside momentarily. We will have day 82.
Kuminga Watch.
Coming up shortly, we'll have more on the Kings and Keegan Murray's extension as well. That's James Hammond, Kyle Madsen. And of course, tons of NFL coming up for you. In the next hour, how much longer are we on? Hour 20? Is that the math? I don't know. We've got NFL stuff coming up for you, too. We've got Mad Props. We've got Fantasy Friday. Firas Siddiqui joining us at 11:20 a.m. That segment's for you. Send us your fantasy questions at youtube.com/ESPN1320. Your fantasy football questions at youtube.com/ESPN1320. And we will get as many of those answered for you with Firas Siddiqui for Fantasy Friday at 11:20. We're the Insiders. It's ESPN1320, Sacramento Sports Center.
Now, back to the Insiders with James Hamm and Kyle Madsen. Brought to you by Jiffy Lube on ESPN 1320.
916-909-1320, 916-909-1320 is the Elk Grove Kia talk line. If you would like to join in on the conversation, we'll have some NFL Week 4 stuff. We're talking about Keegan Murray and a possible extension for him.
Yeah.
And what Jabari Smith Jr.'s extension was and the stats and all that jazz. Before we get to that, Mitch in New Jersey, go ahead.
What's poppin', guys?
What's happening, Mitch?
Happy Friday. I hope you have a nice vacation, Kyle.
Thanks.
Make sure you come back.
I'll do my best.
They got to keep Keegan. You got to extend him. I mean, within reason, of course, but no way you can trade him. I mean, he had so many great draft choices, and then not to let go of Keegan, he's a keeper. Don't trade him. I think Kuminga's value is going down the further we have this Kuminga watch here. And I like the 49ers to win.
Okay.
I don't know what's going on with Jaguars. Their quarterback is kind of an underachiever.
Yep.
And USC, 5-0 after this weekend. A lot of good games this weekend, especially in the Big Ten.
Hey, Mitch. Mitch, fight on, buddy.
Yeah. Shoot.
All right. Guess they didn't hear me. Try to give him a fight on for his USC Trojans. Yeah, I don't think there's any inkling here. Unless Scott Perry watches Keegan Murray and goes, no thanks, which I can't imagine he would.
I think it's funny if that's possible that he's sitting there watching, you know, the guys play and he thinks that about Keegan Murray, because everyone in that gym will tell you that when they see Keegan Murray play and practice and do all the stuff that he can do, that he is much, much, much better than anyone thinks he is. Mm-hmm. It hasn't translated to like him, like maybe the opportunity as much as anything hasn't translated. I think there was like this really brief window where it's like, hey, are you going to be the number two or the number three, a scoring option on this team? And it kind of dissipated when they signed DeMar. You know, year two, Keegan, he averaged 15 a game. If he takes another logical step where, again, he went from, like, as a rookie, what, 11 point something to 15, you could see the next logical step would be for him to jump to.
Yeah, we were talking about could he get to 20 a night?
Yeah, he went from 12.2 to 15.2. The next step would for him to be between 18 and 20 points per game.
Yep.
And instead, he drops to 12.4, and his shot attempts drop by 2 a game. And, you know, not just his shot attempts, but his overall, like, his free throw attempts drop by 0.7. It just, you know, he didn't have the ball. He was asked to be a rebounder.
Yeah.
And a three-point specialist when, you know, they weren't giving enough shots. Even his three-point shots, he dropped 0.7 three-point shots per game from year two to year three.
Yeah.
That doesn't
That's
make any
sense.
That's
a weird pattern. Yeah. Very strange pattern. I think we'll find out, because like I said, I don't think this is a, do they keep him, do they trade him? I don't think this is the discussion.
No.
I think whatever he winds up getting paid will tell us what they think of his place on the team. Maybe not this year, maybe not next year, but in 2027 and beyond.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's, I think, what this is going to tell us. If it comes in, if we find out that they're like, yeah, hey, here's 4 and 80, then, A, they really clearly think he's a defense-first guy who's going to be about 13, 14 points a game. But if they come in at 25, 26, 24, 25, 26, or higher, then I think you automatically have to put him at the front of the line and say, okay, this is a top two scoring option on our team moving forward.
Yeah, no, that's true. I mean, and if it hits like 30, you're like, okay.
Oh, then
they think he's Chris Middleton, and they're going to try to figure out a way to get him there.
If he gets 30 a year, if that's what winds up happening with Keegan's extension, there is no more, from me anyway, there will be no more hand-wringing over his role and the roster around him. Like, at that point, if you're going to pay him $30 million per year, then it's Keegan Murray time.
Yeah.
That's it. I can't sit here right now on his rookie contract and making $11 million or whatever. Like, there's just roster politics in play, at least a little bit. And you can go, well, they paid DeMar DeRozan, they paid Zach LaVine, they paid Domantas Sabonis to be these guys. If you pay Keegan 30 a year,
that's
you're paying
tough.
Him to be that guy.
Yep.
So he has to go be that guy now.
Yep. I would agree.
And any time that he's not, to me, is a pretty dramatic failure.
Yeah, and, you know, I think the one other thing I'd point out, well, a couple of things. Number one, we have to remember, this is a kid who scored 47 in a game.
He did.
Like, and the reason I bring that up is because when a player is able to put up that type of scoring performance, even if it's one game, it shows you that there's, like, a really, really high-level scorer hiding. Like, there are plenty of players. I mean, we watched Kevin Huerter play here, and Kevin Huerter could get hot from the outside like anybody, right, as well as anyone. And his career high was, like, 29. He couldn't break the 30-point barrier forever.
Right.
Keegan Murray walked in and dropped 47 in his second NBA season. He has all kinds of scoring potential. It's just whether or not he's in a situation that sort of caters to him and allows him to develop. And, like, maybe that's not going to happen. But the Suns did this a few years ago. And, it was Cam Johnson and Mikal Bridges, that they had coming up for free agency. And they paid both of them roughly, you know, $21-22 million a year. And if you look at that dollar figure, like 6 years ago or 5 years ago, that's worth like $23-24 million in today's NBA. And that's where I think Keegan will land.
Yeah. I think it's worth noting that the game where Keegan Murray scored 47, De'Aaron Fox did not play in that game. And he took 23 shots.
He scored 47 on 23 shots, Kyle. He shot 12 of 15 from three.
That's a flamethrower. So insane.
And I'm going to turn this
around.
He
made as many threes as Malik Monk took that night.
Oh. Well, and let me turn this around too. And you said he didn't have De'Aaron Fox there, which of course would have taken some of the shots away, right?
Yeah.
I'd also point out he didn't have De'Aaron Fox there to be his point guard.
Sure.
And so he was able to score 47 playing alongside Keon Ellis and Kevin Huerter in the backcourt.
Yeah.
And a rookie Keon Ellis.
Yeah.
Like, that's really, really impressive that he was able to put up that type of number. I don't know. I think the world of him. I think he's a super, super good young man. You know, off the court, you're never going to have a single issue. In the locker room, you're never going to have a single issue. Super humble. But at the same time, like, he can't be a victim of circumstance his entire career. If that's the way his career goes, that's on him. You know, like, mm-hmm. right for right now, it's difficult to go out there and think that you're going to get enough shots to show who you are.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I bring this up all the time. They went from a guy averaging 8.9 shot attempts per game in Harrison Barnes to a guy averaging 17 playing alongside him.
I got that.
Yeah.
I'm going to say issue for me with that is I think that is what happened.
Mm-hmm.
But if they are going to pay him upwards of $25 million per year, and if this season is about culture and they're looking at 2027 and all that, then you need to clear the decks and let Keegan Murray become that player.
Yep.
If that means sending DeMar DeRozan to the bench, if that means sending Zach LaVine to the bench or cutting into their minutes and letting Keegan Murray be the primary option for stretches of game, mm-hmm. then you have to do that. You absolutely have to do that. But like you said, nothing imminent on the Keegan Murray extension front. So I'm sure we'll continue discussing this as the season draws closer. Let's hit the Oak Grove Kia talk line very quickly. Don, you're on the Insiders. What's up?
Kyle Hammer, what's up?
What's up, TC?
What's going on, dude?
Hey, check it out. So I got a trade proposed. I don't know if it'll work or whatnot, but really think about it and talk through it. So I have Malik Monk and Keegan Murray, the guy we're talking about, going to Houston for Jabari and Tari Eason.
All right. I'm going to think about that. Thanks, TC.
Yes.
Got it. Thanks. Yeah, the Kings should do that.
Yeah, I mean, like, no.
You wouldn't do that?
I don't know.
Why?
For Tari Eason and Jabari?
For Malik Monk and Keegan Murray? We've already established Jabari Smith Jr. is at least Keegan Murray, and Tari Eason is a way more valuable player than Malik Monk for the Kings.
Oh, I don't know. Like, Tari Eason has had injury issues. I mean, I don't know. Like, I value Malik Monk as a player. I think he's a good basketball player. I don't know. Like, I don't know if that's enough. And, like, again,
oh,
that's...
Oh, I'm mad. I'm actually mad that that's your take.
That's a complicated
trade. We talk about size, athleticism, defensive switchability. Tari Eason is that. Tari Eason is a freaking dog.
I agree.
He would be perfect for the Kings roster. They have a logjam at the position that Malik Monk plays. It makes sense. This isn't Malik stinks. Let's get him out the door. This is, hey, this roster doesn't make sense. That would make it make more sense. The Rockets would also never in 1 million years do that.
No, nope, probably not. No, I don't know. Well, maybe the Rockets would. I don't know.
Why would they?
Well, because they also have the surplus at the forward position. Like, and they need a point guard because their point guard just went out for the season with a torn ACL.
Kings so don't think that Malik Monk is a point guard that they signed Dennis Schroeder and are trying desperately to sign Russell Westbrook.
Well, yeah, but that's what, I mean, that there's more in play than just the, like, the skill level of Malik Monk. And again, I'll keep saying this. I don't care whether he's their starting point guard or not. He's going to be the guy with the ball in his hands. He's a combo guard who will direct traffic. Like, they don't need a backup point guard unless he's not there. They need a third point guard in case they have an emergency and someone gets hurt, for sure, mm-hmm. which is why I think they're doing the right thing by having Isaiah Stewart be on the, is that his name? On a two-way contract?
Yeah. Sure.
Yeah, yeah. So, sounds like, right. Having a player on a two-way contract that can potentially
isn't
be...
Isn't Isaiah Stewart the center for the Pistons?
Yeah, but what's the other... Who's the guy that they signed? Who's the Kings?
Chatty House, help us.
The two-way player.
Help us!
The Kings. Stevens. Isaiah Stevens.
That's it.
There we go.
Yeah,
we go.
Not Beef Stew.
Yeah.
Shout out to Beef Stew.
Yeah, so, I mean, like, look, I think that we get caught up in this, A, the Kings don't want Malik Monk. I don't know if that's the case as much as it is, like, there's a lot of baggage here, and then there's also this situation that, like, your roster's unbalanced, and you have a GM who is new and wants to shake things up and make things different,
mm-hmm.
and part of that would be, you know, moving players that you think you can move,
mm-hmm.
which I think is how we started with the Malik Monk potential trade. I think they believe that that was one of the easiest ways for them to go get a different mm-hmm. type of player, mm-hmm. and it's just fizzled.
Mm.
We got to go to break.
Yeah, we do. Yeah. That's James Hamm. I'm Kyle Madsen. We'll talk about NFL Week 4. Jesse Tappe will join us on ESPN 1320 Sacramento Sports Center.